Hello, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a podcast from the Lansing State Journal and Detroit Free Press, focused on Michigan State sports. I'm Phil Friend, your host, podcast producer, and sports writer for the LSJ, joined by Free Beat writer Chris Solari and LSJ sports columnist Graham Couch. Gentlemen, it is Wednesday night here in Lansing, Michigan, or Williamson, Michigan, depending on where you are, and today was just an absolutely huge day for the Big Ten, and news, and everything, and fans in general, and boy, it was a mess that started about 9:15, 9:30 this morning, and you know, it's closing in on 10:15 p.m. tonight here, and it's everything still feels kind of surreal a little bit.
It does. I mean, considering that this was a couple weeks ago, I guess we're getting almost a month ago, it was they're not playing, and then they doubled down on it, and the idea that we're here in mid-September talking about a late October start for football didn't seem possible. But that's, you know, what's interesting about this story and everything that's happened with COVID and college football is, and this might be the lesson for everybody making decisions, is things change quickly. And there are obviously political winds and other forces. But, you know, the rapid testing thing really wasn't there August 11th. And that's what they're pinning their hopes on. And I'm not saying they knew that was coming and they should have held off. I mean, obviously, in hindsight, making that decision was probably premature, but that's sort of the lesson, right? You don't know what's 2 weeks from now. And that, again, is the lesson, right, Chris? I mean, we don't know. I mean, right now there's a Big Ten schedule, but there's also, you know, an outbreak on Michigan State's campus. There's a quarantine in Wisconsin. There's issues in Indiana and other places, and we don't know where this is going to be in 3-4 weeks. And so we'll see, but right now it looks good.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, to Bill Beekman's credit, earlier Wednesday, I guess, earlier than now, in our late night overnight drive shift here, you know, I thought that it's the night shift with Graham and Chris and Phil. I think that, you know, he was realistic about it. I mean, and I think all these athletic directors, you know, and we talked about this, how many times have I used the term false optimism, right? I mean, the rapid testing is not false optimism. That's legitimate and actual and tangible optimism. But at the same point, what that does is allow you to know if someone has the virus and how quickly, and to separate them from the others. That doesn't mean the virus won't get around, and that doesn't mean that there's a chance that it won't spread. And I think Bill Beekman, you know, he said that, you know, earlier Wednesday, he said it's probably inevitable that of the 14 teams, there will be a time when one or more teams can't play for a week or more. That's the reality of what we've seen already in college football, and it's the reality the Big Ten needs to prepare for. And that's saying something beyond simply just the idea that they have this good testing. And I think that's important. I think I don't want to minimize that. I think that's the reason, one of the two reasons I think that you're seeing it back, and the change of heart from the president's, one of three, the third, of course, being the most important, of the lack of cash that all of a sudden these athletic departments hit. But I think that and the better idea of the myocarditis issue, which still is an issue. I think that's another thing that in talking to some of the people in the Big Ten today, you know, they understand it could be an issue, but they've got a multi-pronged approach to test if an athlete does come down with it. So that was also something that wasn't at that point in place. That those protocols needed to be worked out. But again, you know, there's still a lot of uncertainty and unknowns. But, you know, as of right now, and I've said this how many times, Graham, you've heard me say this, don't write the word "will play" or "they're going to play." It's scheduled to play at this point, because that's just the world we're living in right now.
Absolutely. I thought one of the things interesting about Bill Beekman today when he spoke is he could speak with some authority. When he had his Zoom press conference, a few weeks ago, when the verdict was different, it was clear that athletic directors had been left out of the room and left out of the know.
Right.
And he really couldn't speak from – he could speak from a place of what it might do to the detriment of his athletic department, but not really for the reasons for why they had canceled football. He could speak with more authority. And to your point about the cash, you know, as he brought up today, it's, you know, a $30 million loss they were looking at, and that's with some serious budget cuts and all the furloughs they're undergoing already and everything like that. And then it was going to be a $30 million shortfall. Football, basically, the television revenue alone covers that. And with a scaled back, like they're going to let all the other sports play, which is an important note, but the operational costs, they're going to try to keep them down. So you're going to see, you won't see the soccer team in California for a non-league tournament, and the baseball team in Florida and those sort of things you're not going to see. But I think that's good, and that's why one of the reasons college football is the most important sport in our country. Whether the priorities are correct in playing right now is an argument. That's where I'm conflicted. But there certainly is no sport that to a greater degree impacts more people in terms of livelihoods and other sports and opportunity.
I'm not certain that by the end of the week that the Big Ten will have any other fall sports. I've heard from some people that's the ultimate decision, that this is going to be football only right now.
Well, what I mean, and but there is no
what's
fall.
Gonna, but they obviously, well, here's the thing. Other conferences around the country are still going through their fall sports. The NCAA obviously changed the championships to push them back to spring, which is a problem. I mean, that's something, and I think that they're going to discuss this a lot, but, do you want those athletes to compete in the same season? Is it a budgetary issue where you don't want it? You want to try and keep the 2020 ledger a little free, and you can push that back to 2020 and take the hit and try and make up the revenue? I don't know. I mean, but I've heard that there's a good chance that it would just be football, which from an optics standpoint to me is really bad, because it makes it just look like, well, geez, this really is only about the money.
Well, there are a couple things though. If the college football playoff was in May, then it made more sense to play in the spring. All the NCAA championships have been moved, because you have to have more than half the teams or whatever have been moved to the spring. So the teams that are, I don't know what fall sports are competing now, but they're going to have to. So in other words, the men's soccer, which would usually be in the fall, is in the spring now. So you might as well have
them. And every other football championship outside of the FBS and the group of five is playing in the spring.
It's in the spring.
That's where the championships are.
If the championship's in the spring, you might as well play the season in the spring. So I don't think just because they don't have fall sports now going with football doesn't mean they won't have fall sports. I think you're right, though, that they might not have anything else playing in this season, especially when you don't know. See, the thing that's risky is if you commit to other sports and you commit to those operational costs and something goes wrong where you can't play football and you can't get that television revenue, you have a big problem. In terms of the budget, the fiscal year for them starts July 1. So I think that's all the.
That's true.
That's when what they'll look
at.
That's
true.
But yeah, I think you're right. I think there is like to have a robust fall calendar with the other sports right now, before you had revenue from football assured, I think would be risky.
Purdue beat writer Mike Carmen also kind of said what you said, Chris, about how he thinks everything's going to be in the fall, or excuse me, all of those other fall sports are going to be in the spring as well. I don't know if he had sources or if that was just his personal opinion, but to go along with what you said earlier, I want to take you guys back to, I don't know, maybe a month or so, kind of a two-pronged question here. I'm going to start with Graham first.
A month or so ago, which seems like 5 years.
I know, right?
By the way, Graham, how long ago does that game at Penn State seem to you? Basketball game.
Yeah. Those are.
I mean, that might as well be 3 years ago at this point.
Four lifetimes ago for me.
So I want to. So it was roughly a little over a month ago when the Big Ten decided they were going to cancel the season. So at what point did you officially think that the Big Ten was going to return? And ultimately, are you okay with the Big Ten's decision? Two-pronged question for both of you.
You know, I can't remember exactly what it was that made me think, okay, yes, that they're likely going to come back. But there were clearly murmurs about it and reports that they were reconsidering. It was not the Kevin Warren Donald Trump conversation, but it was about that timeline. And whether I'm okay with it is interesting. I am conflicted. There's no question. And I mean, I love college football. There's something about it with, you know, I'm an advocate. The way I feel on a Saturday morning to watch that Iowa Purdue noon game, you know, like, yeah, I don't know. It was like the best Saturdays. The way a college football Saturday feels, the helmets, the way they shine off a helmet in a night game. There are things I love about college football that are just deep in my soul. That said, I've been a little conflicted about the priorities and still am. I don't love that. Look, rapid testing is great, and I think it does make it safe for the players and safe to stop community spread from, you know, player to player, town to town, and make it safer for them to compete on the field. And that's great. I have a little bit of an issue with the fact that those tests are available to college athletes before they are available to high school math teachers and students. And that's something I'm going to have to wrestle with. That that's bothered me. And I think the other thing that the people who were really, really gung-ho, the Nebraskatonians or whatever they are, the Ohio, the Ryan Days of the world, the people just push this for, I think, for their own self-interest because they love football and want football. I for a while resented those people because I didn't think they were arguing from a position of reasonably what was best. You know, it was about themselves. Ryan Day wants to compete in the college football playoff. That's why they want to go early. And, nothing would make me happier than Ohio State losing to Purdue to open the season and have their playoff hopes dash and have that whole storyline gone, because that bothered me. So it wasn't that I didn't want football back. I certainly, if football can be played safely, would love to have college football back. But I learned to resent some of the people who were pushing it and how they were pushing it. And so you get to the point where you don't want them to enjoy football. And, you know, football comes back, yeah, and they enjoy it. And that's a very petty way of thinking, but it all comes back to the conflicted nature of it, where I don't know if this should be our priority right now. I think this is a bad week for it. I think this was, look, you've got, you know, we're getting up near 1,000 cases over at Michigan State University. You know, you've got Ingham County, where Michigan State is. I don't know if by the end of the week could even play a Big Ten football game based on the 7.5%, community or the positivity rate for the community you're in, for Ingham County. You've got, you know, Wisconsin in lockdown, as I mentioned. You've got things like I if I were a school president, I would have said, all this looks really good. I'm not doing this week. I'm not. And I understand they do things in a consensus, and I bet you there were some pushback on that. And obviously the people who were in the minority this time probably were not going to squawk like they did at Wisconsin, and we're not going to bow like they did at Ohio State when Ohio State wasn't originally for playing. They were against it, and they felt political pushback in their own state and from their own fan base, and they changed their vote. So I don't know. I am conflicted if that's the answer. I am going to cover it. I am going to enjoy it. And I am, but I'm also aware that there's some perversion in our priorities.
I think Graham took a big left turn on that.
Follow that, Chris.
Hey, when did you think it was going to be a reality? You know, just to echo some of what Graham said, in some ways, and obviously not necessarily as vociferously as Graham, but, I think it was on both sides. I think we've seen a lot of people on both sides of the issue, you know, fighting against it, fighting for it. You know, the biggest thing is the safety piece. You know, the biggest thing you don't want to see is medical people pushed into a decision based on pressure that goes against their medical training. And if they believe it's safe, then that's good. There are other issues at play. The community spread is something that, when I talked with Dr. Amish Adalja, class of Butler High, 1993, but he's at Johns Hopkins as an infectious disease doctor. He's on the NCAA panel. That's a big concern, the community spread. And when I say that, I'm not just talking about the simple fact that these rates are going up in these communities. I'm talking about the fact that these, and you've seen this a number of times already, right? You know, you saw it at Oklahoma at one point. You saw it at a couple other places where you can't. It's because they're amateur athletes. If you want to keep that guise, right? If you want to continue the facade of being amateurs, you're not going to be able to tell them you can't go see your family. And what if their family brings it to them when they come to these games? Michigan State and the other Big Ten schools are working on trying to get family members to be able to see these games, but you know they're going to see these kids after the game. What if one of them spreads it to the team? What if these kids go out into the community? And like Bill Beekman was even talking about, you know, that their kids that are coming back with these positive cases, many of them aren't out at bars with hundreds of people. They're in small gatherings and just doing normal things and playing cards with about half dozen people. And that's how it's spread. You know, that's a concern. That's a real concern that, you know, the only good thing that the rapid testing will tell you is if when you come back for practice the next day, well, those six teammates that were playing cards last night are all of a sudden going to be in isolation if they have COVID and if one of them spread to the other. So certainly there are issues. Now, when did I think it would come back? You know, I started to think that things could change when the rapid testing was revealed, and that wasn't too long after. But at the same point, the Big Ten was adamant, and other people were around the conference were adamant they weren't going to play. Well, last week, and this to tell you how quickly this story developed. Late last week, you know, I had a source telling me that Michigan State was still preparing to play for a post-Thanksgiving at the earliest or January football schedule. So, you know, that was, I believe, Wednesday or Thursday. And even when I think it was Thursday that the Big Ten got that letter from the six congressmen and wrote almost a really flippant response where they were quoting, you know, Graham loves the quote tweets. That Big Ten response was nothing but a statement with a quote tweet. But, you know, quoting the letter, I thought that was a little glib, but then probably it was around Saturday, the wheels were turning quite a bit. And you started hearing from sources that it was really picking up. And by Sunday, from what I understand, that's when the vote was taken. And this is so what the holdup was between Sunday and Wednesday is a big question to ask. What I think is interesting is that I believe that Wisconsin and Barry Alvarez is on the scheduling committee, and he had a lot to do with this. Wisconsin's pause in playing, I think, runs until September 24th. Well, that's 1 month before the season starts. So if you would have started on the 17th of October, you wouldn't have had Wisconsin playing week one. So that's what we talk about, things fast moving and political. Yeah. I mean, we're not just talking about the president. We're not talking about senators being political. I mean, there's politics that goes on in the Big Ten all the time. But you've seen the messy side of it on the conference level being played out in public. Usually you don't see it played out as publicly as we have. And that's been the real, the messiness and the lack of communication from the Big Ten, I think, has been the big problem that the Big Ten has faced here in the last month.
Yeah. And I'm going back through some tweets here and some things and just looking at the date, and the September 13th was Sunday, right? Yeah. It would have been Sunday. And that was the day that I had heard somebody, the exact format that came out with the, now they were preferring October 17th at the time, the 8 week, the extra game for every team, 2-2, 3-3, last place versus last place in the division, the bonus game. And so I guess it was sometime around there, or maybe that, you know, Christmas Saturday that you started to see it. And I think the Pac-12, which is not playing now, and has other issues going on with air quality and states and different levels of lockdown with COVID. But them leading the way and changing their tune a little bit with the rapid testing, I think also paved the way for the Big Ten. And I don't know, you know, the thing is, what's interesting, Chris, is that for so long, you know, rightfully so, we were very critical of the Big Ten's inability to explain itself on the front end when it canceled the season. And to do so adequately. But the one thing they did mention, and Samuel Stanley from Michigan State mentioned, was the issue and concerns with testing. And ultimately, that gave them – testing wound up being the piece, and the myocarditis is obviously an important part. But without the rapid testing, I don't think we get to this point, because the ability to test an entire squad the day of a game on both teams and maybe every worker in the stadium or whatever it is, and just feel like you have created a bubble on game day, I think is truly, the essential piece.
Yeah, and I think, for what the Pac-12 also took away from the Big Ten in terms of public perception when, back on August 11th, they rolled Kevin Warren out on BTN, which should be, as friendly a friendly face as you get if you're the Big Ten commissioner. I mean, that's your network. And I thought Dave Grevson did a pretty good job of asking some tough questions to Kevin Warren. He wasn't ready. He wasn't prepared. And he sounded like someone who was talking around subjects rather than what the Pac-12 did a day later when they canceled and had a 23-page report telling you why, and had Larry Scott out there, the commissioner, talking about it. And not, mind you, Larry Scott also had a COVID case. So he's got plenty of background on this. But he talked to numbers of media outlets around the entire Pac-12 to explain it. And Kevin Warren, all that he's done was go on the Big Ten Network and be floated to national media. Well, what are you doing? What are you doing to answer the people in West Lafayette that have concerns, or Madison, or State College, or East Lansing, where, again, you've seen the houses getting, 30 houses quarantined, large houses? The cases are rising. You've got Maryland on pause. You've got Wisconsin. You're continuing to – you have to look inward a little bit and understand that you might be the Big Ten, but you're still responsible to these communities. And that, I think, did not help him one bit in Lincoln, Nebraska, or Columbus, Ohio, the fact that this guy didn't come out and explain it. And I don't necessarily know if it's all his fault. I think he has enough people in that Big Ten office that command high salaries that, quite honestly, should have had him prepared for some of that stuff from his own network, and they didn't. And then they wouldn't pull him out there. And even today in the announcement, notice they had five other people surrounding us for cover. And I thought Doug Ray Maurice from Cleveland.com got the one question that kind of got through that wasn't one of the normal national honks. Doug grilled him and said, "Why was your communication so terrible?" And he deflected it. I mean, that's, he only wanted to look forward. But, that's the reality where the Big Ten is. And they've got a lot of public perception they got to make up in the 14 Big Ten communities, and particularly with a number of the students and parents and everybody else who went through hell and high water to try and get this back, or at least at the minimum get an explanation. So, but yeah. the bigger thing they have now is they have their football back.
Yeah, and I think people will forget. I mean, here's the thing, nobody pays attention to the conference office until a moment like this, right? I mean,
yeah.
It becomes a very hot topic, but people care about their teams and their football, and I do think the best thing that can happen for the Big Ten is football, and that it happens, and that it happens safely, in terms of a COVID perspective. I mean, there's no violent collisions, obviously, but and that it goes off without a hitch, and revenue is generated there will be bygones. I mean, people will, I mean, this is, first of all, the one thing I'll say about, I thought they owed us a lot more because this is a public health crisis, and I was disappointed in that, and the president's too, and just in the lack of transparency entirely,
By us, it's not us reporters. It's the community at large that is around these universities.
But I also think that there are two things about leadership right now. One, it's really hard to lead in these times, but it also is lacking. We're seeing it a lot of places. We see people give in and struggle to lead and disappoint people. And leadership is sometimes disappointing people. Sometimes it's admitting you're wrong and reversing course. But leadership is been lacking a lot of places. But it's also, I think, really difficult right now because you know, on every subject, it seems like there's a division, and it all revolves around how serious COVID-19 is, and you know, the people who here's my problem with people who really push college football to come back because they wanted college football back, and they were just angry, and like that energy, that passion, if we had as a society had that about getting kids back in schools in June, they'd be back in schools right now. And so that's what bothers. It's a priority thing, and that's where any issue I have with the decision right now isn't about the decision itself. I think the decision looks fairly wise based on the information they have. They look like they've done a ton of work. They look like they've got great protocols. They look like they've got situations where communities have to live up to their end of the bargain. Teams have to live up to their end of the bargain. My issue is just the priority overall. And I'll get over that.
What have the players done in all of this? Because this, in all of this, what has been lost once again in a lot of ways, are the athletes. Do you feel, and this is for either and both of you guys, do you feel that the athletes early in this process looked like they had understood the power that they had to exact some change, to get things done? Did they acquiesce that power? Did they give it up? Did they cave when you had these players coming together saying, we want this, that, or the other thing, and demanding better testing and demanding a lot of other things, and then all of a sudden saying, no, actually, we just want to play?
I mean, it's kind of funny that, you know, the night the Trevor Lawrence, Justin Field, I think Trevor Lawrence really led the way here, but those tweets that came out about, you know, trying to, it wasn't really a union per se, but it was, you know, collecting the players together to stand for all of those things that you mentioned, Chris. And then three or four days, all that stuff, all of the big stuff in terms of like unionizing was long gone. Once some of those power conferences, like the ACC, the SEC, and the they said they decided they were basically going to play. So I would say to your question that they really probably did not, you know, maximize that to that part of it anyway, to their full potential.
Well, I also think that like everybody else, they don't all agree. I mean, do see people opting out. I don't think this is a unified front right now. I think there are a lot of players who aren't enthusiastic about this particular year. And I think there are some who really want to play, and some want to do, you know, want to play for their own reasons. Some, you know, think they ought to play. I mean, I think it's just hard to get any group right now. And I think that was part of the issue. You know, they had more power than the coaches. I was surprised. Like, I know Ryan Day is the coach of Ohio State. It's a damn good thing I'm not the commissioner of the Big Ten, because I would have told him to sit down. I would have told him, we'll listen to the players. We'll listen to the presidents. You know who we're not going to listen to? The head coaches. Sit down. But
you saw the exact reason why there weren't coaches and athletic directors in those initial meetings with that.
Well, coaches especially. I mean, first of all, coaches, and I've known some great coaches, but coaches can be some weird dudes too. And, you know, and their priorities are what their priorities are.
Yeah, I mean, it's football 24/7, 365. They don't. Yeah. There's very little outside of football that they're paying attention to. World, political, other sports, you know, things in general. It's very, very narrow-minded.
And you discover it with some of these guys when they do get asked deep questions. Some of them are smart. Some of them are deep thinkers. But when some of these guys get asked things that are outside of their realm, you discover just how little, you know, how little they've read or how little they've consumed other things. And but I think the players did and do. And I think going forward, what's going to be fascinating is that I think the players have also, like, how we treat football players, how we view them now, because they were so necessary for athletic departments. They were so necessary for part of this. I think they know it. I think we're going to view we can no longer pretend at any level that a football player and a soccer player or volleyball player are the same thing on a scholarship on a campus. We just can't. and terms of, and we always knew that, but we really can't now. And I think conversations moving forward will be with that understanding.
Of course, what will the athlete side be on those conversations now that name, image, and likeness is coming up? Because
that's a big thing.
In watching the congressional hearings this week, it sure doesn't seem like the senators seem to understand any of this. When a senator is saying things like, well, I think that if an athlete earns some money off their name or image or likeness while they're in college, it should be distributed to all the athletes in college.
That was not
a liberal Democrat saying that either.
No, that's not really the whole point of name, image, and likeness. And name, image, and likeness, if it goes, and I think it will eventually get to where we think it will, I think that'll also make things less unified, because I think it's going to divide locker rooms. And while it's right, it should be a right that kids have, it will not be. It'll be a mess for a little while, and that will not help their overall empowerment, because while they have that, they won't agree on much. There'll be a lot of resentment in a lot of places. It'll be an overall mess.
You know where there should be resentment? For these kids who make $9 million a year on their YouTube channels. You know why I say that? There's no restrictions on them doing that as a 9-year-old or a 12-year-old or a 15-year-old. But if you all of a sudden become a recruited athlete and you have a YouTube channel, you can't do that.
Right, you can't do that. You can't create a Patreon or whatever for, you know, whatever project or projects you're doing, stuff like that. Yeah,
I mean, that's, you know, if a 9-year-old kid playing with toys, so my 5-year-old kid watches it, all of a sudden makes $9 million off that. What about the athletes whose high school games are on television or whose college games are on television? What's their worth? I mean, that's the reality of this. You know, there's a worth to things. I used to tell journalism students who would come to after I'd give them my little spiel, what's your major and do you have time to change it? I would tell them, I say, don't work for free. I mean, it's great to have experience. You could do that any number of places. But what you do has value to it. And I think one thing is the athletes are becoming more hyper aware of because of social media. And I thought Michigan State did a good job in those first couple days of pumping out a lot of that name, image, and likeness, and how can you build your brand? I mean, these athletes, these kids are aware of it. Their peers are doing it. Their peers at the highest levels are doing it and turning pro. So, you know, colleges have to adapt with the times, and, you know, you know, but again, you know what else athletic departments worry about with that, particularly with everything else that's going on? What if the endorsement money that you have from a local sponsor, instead of going to your athletic department, now all of a sudden goes to your quarterback?
Let's kind of go back here to the Big Ten announcement today. One thing I'm interested in is the protocols. This is something Grainer and I talked about a little bit off air. The protocols that the Big Ten has in place for, you know, the county or the community, you know, the percentages of people who are testing positive for COVID. It is on my understanding. I don't think any of the other conferences have those kind of protocols in place. Do you guys happen to know that at all? And if so, do you think A, those protocols are too strict, and B, do you think they might have to change them if a number of schools fail to reach that number?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't know what they have like downside. Like, I think it's important to have those protocols, because like the 5% on a team, that's a pretty standard, the 5% positivity rate. You see schools and communities that's sort of a mark that when they go above, things change, they shut down, they get out of the classroom. You get to 7.5%, you shouldn't be doing a lot of things in your community. And so I think that's smart, and it puts the onus on people. You look, you know, one of the things that was interesting about all summer, we looked at young people for what they were doing demanding social justice, and we looked at what student athletes were saying. We want voice, and they want to be treated like adults. And then you watch college student behavior and the outbreaks it causes. You can't have it both ways. If you want to be taken seriously, if you want to be listened to, you've got to behave on campus, and you ought to have the account. I like that students that piece of it put more than anything, because if you take student bodies off out of these communities, you're never going to get above 7.5% right now, or you shouldn't. the only thing that threatens these communities is student behavior. And I think it puts accountability on them. And I really like that piece of it in terms of the positivity rate protocol.
Yeah, I think it's important. And I think it's important to keep that larger community in mind. It has to be that way. And I think that's at least one thing that they were able to do was spend that month trying to get those protocols in place. I like the job that they have with the multi-level approach to athletes who do contract COVID, I think is important because, I think it was a 4-part process to check for myocarditis and any other potential heart issues. I think that may seem excessive, but I think that in talking to some of those medical people and some of the people on the Big Ten committee, there's still unknowns with that. It remains unknowns with that. And, it's going to be a risk that athletes are going to have to take and understand. The percentages aren't great. That didn't sound right. The percentages aren't high for that to happen, but it is a potential. And, especially, and I've said this how many times over the last couple of months, your heart and your lungs as an elite athlete are the most important things because that's a lot of times what separates, the elite athletes that get major Division I scholarships from kids at D2 and D3 and, the elite of the elite become pros and the 1% of that becomes superstars. And a lot of times it's because of their cardio and because of their lung capacity. So, that's good in terms of protecting these kids. And I think it was Rebecca Blank from Wisconsin said that athletes will be protected if they do get COVID. I think it was 2 years that they will get that. So that's something that I think is important for kids if they are going to opt in and play to have some protections. And I think that's one thing where the rights that they were trying to fight for. Certainly you can, if I see some of these testing protocols and I was a kid who was leery or on the fence, I should say, because I think some of the kids who are leery probably just aren't going to do it. And I think some of the kids who were gung ho are going to do it regardless, but it's the kids that are in the middle that you wonder about. And I think Marcel Lewis is one of those guys who opted back in, the redshirt freshman. He had family members who had COVID and who died from COVID. And these protocols that he saw today helped him decide to opt back in, which I think is, but for every Marcel Lewis, there's going to be other guys who opt out. And you've seen it around the country in other schools and other conferences, even in the middle of the season. So it's just going to be a wild ride, I think, from here until December or January or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting couple months. And like you look at Memphis today, where 42 of their 46 student athletes who came out of COVID were football related activities. And then you have LSU coach at Orgeron today saying, either yesterday today saying, basically our entire team's had it at some point. So, looking at Michigan State and looking at the potential 9-game schedule, I mean, what percentages would you say that Michigan State will actually play the full 9-game season? Maybe if you want to throw something out there, the Big Ten in general, what percentage of games overall do you think we'll actually see played throughout the course of the season?
I'm going to keep it short because I think it's hard to gauge, because here's the thing. Michigan State could do every single thing right, have zero tests, and Iowa could have 35 tests and you're not playing that game. I mean, there are things that are out of your own control right now. They're literally out of each program's control other than, this is great coach speak because coaches love this, you control what you can control.
Control the controllables.
But that's not controllable for them, but what the opponent's doing during their work week, right, until before Saturday. So, what percentage do I think? Let's say they're going to play 9 or they're scheduled to play 9. And we'll just assume Michigan State does everything right. They have no positive cases. They're good schoolboys and have their books and pencils all together and are studying all the time instead of doing anything else. I'd say, you know, six or seven. And that's spitballing, because that's all that we can really do at this point, because we don't, just like the COVID stuff, we don't have the data. We don't know how it's going to be other than what we've seen around the country where games have already been shuffled and pushed back. But the Big Ten doesn't have any flexibility because there's no bye weeks to just push back a game right now. That's I think, the one thing that's going to, as Bill Beekman had said, cause some of these teams that do have to cancel, they're going to cancel those games. There's no time to make them up.
Right, yeah, you don't have the – with the original 10-game schedule, you had the windows, and they're not going to have those. It's impossible to know. I think you'll have some Big Ten games canceled. Maybe Michigan State will be one. Maybe they won't. And you know, how – whether it's 2 weeks in a row, what we also don't really have a sense of is, you know, how – you know, we're that's going to be played largely in a time of the year where – you know, the flu season, and it's just going to be a little bit different. We're going to be a lot more indoors. And so I to answer your question, I have no idea, Phil.
All right. Well, let's move on to some Twitter questions here, guys. First one comes from Zach Serdinek. He asked, what is a reasonable record for Michigan State this year? Graham?
It's a really good question. We haven't seen the schedule yet. My understanding is it's probably going to be similar to the one that was out previously. It's a tough schedule. But, you know, it's a weird year in some ways because it's they didn't get a real run up. I don't think for Michigan State they would have minded not playing this year. I think they knew they needed the time. But on the other hand, and it's not ideal that you're playing conference only, although Miami, BYU, Toledo is not going to be easy for this group. On the other hand, though, it's a shorter schedule, right? So you're not going to get worn down like you might late in the year. You're playing against a conference and opponents, many of which have lost their best players, perhaps to the NFL draft. We'll see how many opt back in. So there'll be some talent, lessening of the talent that you're facing. And it's not going to be a year. It's going to be different. It's going to happen quickly. There may be some bowls. There may not. You're not going to feel like you're sitting out December if, you know, it doesn't finish. If your season ends December 19th, and you don't play in a bowl game a week and a half later, it's not going to feel like you really missed out on anything. So I think in some ways for a first year, as you're trying to get your feet wet as a program, there's some good things. If Michigan State plays the 9 games, you know, I would guess, you know, and I don't know who they're going to play, but I would guess just based on the talent they have offensively that they should be competitive in half their games, whether they win them, I don't know, but at least half of them, they should be competitive. They should be better than Maryland still. They should be better than Rutgers, unless those programs have taken giant steps forward. And they should be competitive in a couple other games. I would say three and five seems, I don't want to say optimistic, but reasonable is something to expect. If they play a ninth, 4-5, 3-6, that range.
Chris?
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind that Mel Tucker has yet to have a practice in pads with his players. I mean, that's the timing of everything just really conspires against them having a lot of traction. I think they're going to be competitive. I think the tough thing when you have new faces in important places, it takes an adjustment period. And a lot of times that adjustment period happens during spring ball, summer workouts, and preseason camp. Well, that's all been kind of scuttled for Michigan State. So, you know, I do agree with Graham, though, that I think that, you know, you got a veteran group on the offensive line that's back, and I think the time off should help them be a little healthier. If anybody, I think, benefited from it, it's those offensive linemen who have been so banged up over the last few years from a health standpoint, not maybe just from a physical standpoint, not from a timing standpoint that's needed on that line together. And, you know, you have so many replacements coming on the defensive side as well. You know, I'd probably say that 3-4 win range. Again, this is without seeing who the opponents are going to be. But, you know, I believe what I heard earlier today and this is still Wednesday, even though it feels like it's been 48 hours to 72 hours ago. You know, I think I had heard that they're going to try and go back to the original Big Ten schedule that was planned out before the season, not the recrafted one from August.
Yeah, that's what Purdue athletic director Mike Babinski said. Yeah,
which is a 9-game Big Ten schedule, but you would have to drop one. So, you know, who's the one that gets dropped for Michigan State in that? It odds are it'll be a crossover game that gets dropped for these teams rather than a divisional game. Just you know. And perhaps they even, you know, because I don't know how, I'm not privy to the meetings. It could be just where's the farthest away game. So if it's Michigan State, you'd probably, you know, farthest away game, I think, on the schedule was
Iowa.
Let's see. Well, Iowa. Yeah. Iowa was the crossover because Indiana, Penn State, and Maryland are all in your division.
Right.
So it'd probably be on that respect, it would be Iowa. So, you know, that would lighten the load a little bit more. But you still have Ohio State, Michigan, and, you know, no idea if the Michigan game's still going to be in Ann Arbor or as they changed it to, or if they're going to put it in East Lansing like it was supposed to be originally. So, in other words, none of us know anything. That's my answer.
Perfect. Great.
Final answer.
Great record predictions from you guys. Despite no padded practices for Mel Tucker, I'm going to ask this question anyway from Hamza. One player on each side of the ball who could have a breakout year. Graham?
Oh, well, I mean, on offense, I mean, yeah, it's you know the guy that and there are a number of receivers. You know, you look at the Trey Mosley's of the world. You know, I don't know which receiver. I have a feeling though, there will be a receiver this year because they have a lot of intriguing young guys, and that's really to me what makes this season interesting is their skill position. I mean, obviously their offensive line's more experienced. They've got to take steps there, but I mean. What's going to be fun to watch, I think, is the skill position guys on offense. You know, Elijah Collins, he's kind of established himself, obviously, and he's you know, an exciting young back. But they've got a number of guys, and I don't know who will emerge there because I really don't know who will separate themselves. But I would say, you know, I do think they'll wind up that's one of the advantages of playing this season rather than not. Is that we will leave December knowing that somebody emerged there. That's a guy you can lean on. That's a guy you can, you know, you've got a stud there on offense. Defensively, it's really hard. And Naquan Jones to me is the guy who's the best NFL talent on the roster. Is he going to be consistent? I don't know, but it's his time in the middle, and he probably knows it. And so that would be my pick.
Chris.
Yeah, I would go with Naquan Jones as well, but you know, and some of that is because we don't know what's happening yet with Jacob Panishuk, who opted out originally. You know, is he going to opt back into play, which would give you a better defensive end and would take pressure off Naquan Jones in a lot of ways? But and Panishuk, I think, also could be one of those kind of guys in his last year if he does play. Well, I shouldn't say last year because of those pesky waivers the NCAA are going to be granting. To all these kids, whether they do or don't play this fall. I think the other thing with Naquan Jones is that he hasn't been an every down nose tackle. You know, the bulk of those reps went to Raekwon Williams and Mike Panishuk the last few years, and he's been kind of the second team guy for a few years. So physically, how is he going to be able to handle more reps and snaps? But I do like, I think him, and I think the other guy on the defensive side that I would say is primed for a potential breakout, you know, that maybe is off the radar. And Antoine Simmons mentioned him as Chase Klein, the linebacker. He's obviously turned heads of his peers and his coaches. And, you know, they lose two starting linebackers in Joe Bocci and Tyreek Thompson. So you got some holes there to fill. And I think Noah Harvey's one of those linebackers, and it sounds like Chase Klein could be the other. On the offensive side, you know, I'd agree with you about the receivers. Jaden Reed, obviously, is a kid that you've heard a lot about, which stuns me that I'm the first person to bring up the Western Michigan transfer here. I really
I was trying not to do it. I was trying to
go that well. Well, I think Jaden Reed and Trey Mosley both have a really good shot. Which I think will definitely help Rocky Lombardi in his transition. And I think that, you know, it'll be interesting to see how Rocky Lombardi, without someone necessarily looking over his shoulder, will do. Although the leash of a quarterback under a new coaching staff, an older quarterback in particular, sometimes can be short. So, you know, I think that he's shown, at least from what we've heard from him and, you know, some of the things that I've heard from others and seen, he's shown some pretty good leadership, and he's always been a good leader. It's the next step that he needs to take. But I still think that, to me, the breakout guy, and this is going to seem a little weird because last year was kind of a breakout for him, is Elijah Collins. Because Elijah Collins nearly got 1,000 yards running behind a line that was banged up to high hell and has been for the last 2 years. So if you were able to get Elijah Collins behind a steady group of five under Chris Kapilovich, who can give him holes and give him room to the outside, I think you're talking about, you know, potential Jeremy Langford type season for this kid. And if you get that, well, then a lot of things open up for Rocky Lombardi and those receivers, because, you know, you got to key in on the run at that point, and that should open up the passing game. So I'm going to say Elijah Collins on the offensive side. I think he can break the 1,000-yard mark, even though it'll probably be pretty tough with only 9 games.
All right, I'm going to participate in this question as well. On the offensive side of the ball, I am going to say, actually, it's redshirt freshman on both sides of the ball, but on the offensive side, Devontae Dobbs, the big offensive lineman, the 4 or 5-star mm-hmm. guy, depending on who you ask, player. I think this is the year he shows that promise and is a big part as to why Elijah Collins may or may not get 1,000 yards this year. And on the defensive side of the ball, Michael Fletcher, a 6'6", 259-pound defensive end. He'll be a redshirt freshman. Watch out for him. Book it. All right.
Yeah, Fletcher's a good candidate.
Thank you.
Sometimes it takes those DNs a little bit of time to adjust to that college level. He's got the physical tools. Maybe not this year, but for sure down the line to be a force coming off the edge. And they need pass rushing with the losses they've sustained on that defensive line.
Khalil just said book it. It's not next year. It's this year, Chris.
I'll take it.
That is true.
Coach Ross Anderson asked, do you expect the mask mandate will be enforced at the Big Ten level like other college, club, and high schools in the state?
I'll jump on that one first, because I actually messaged the Big Ten about that, and I'm waiting to hear about it.
Gotcha.
When I talk about things that matter at a local level that the Big Ten ignores, that's one of them, because that's obviously on the books as a governor's mandate that needs to be done. And I asked the Big Ten, is it going to be not just the mandate for the mask, but is it going to be a cloth mask mandate, or are you going to have those plastic face shields, and who pays for them? Things that are important to these individual institutions and laws that go around each community. I think, I'll let you know when I hear back from the Big Ten about that and what the protocol was for Brian Lewerke's concussion and the spotter on that from last fall that I haven't heard back from.
You know, obviously, Governor Gretchen Whitmer has is requiring masks be worn in high school football. The difference is they don't have rapid testing, so you're trying. You know, the masks right. are your answer when you don't know who has COVID and who doesn't. And so I, right now it's on the books, but I think that will be modified, and the rapid testing will be. I mean, it's an easy reason. It's not her having
the Lions, for example, are exempt from that because of their testing protocols.
Well, and they're a pro team. She did, you know, a while back, she did, right. You know, all pro sports. And so college sports is a little different. It would be harder just to say college sports, but the testing protocols, you're right, Chris, are what separates the situation.
Chains Ramon asks, is illness and lack of depth on the bench going to make this a less meaningful season?
Well, meaningful is interesting here, because I do think this will have, it's going to be different. It's going to be a season I think you can shake off a little better if it doesn't, or a little easier if it doesn't go well, because it's an odd season. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be different. I think if you win the Big Ten, it won't be any less. It won't be any less difficult to do. And if you win a national championship, I don't think that's any less difficult. So I don't know if it'll have less meaning. I do think you'll find times that, if COVID becomes something that is hindering rosters, the thing is you get to, it doesn't take a whole lot to get to 5% positivity on a roster. So if you've got 100 guys on a roster and you get to 5 pretty quickly when you get an outbreak. And so I think if you don't have the depth in that sense, you're not going to be playing, period, if that makes sense. I mean, really, you get to five guys, you're sitting out the week. So I don't know that that's going to be an issue actually playing.
That's a position room. I mean, quite honestly, and that's the tight end position room. That's not even counting guys, the deeper positions like the defensive backs or, say, the offensive linemen. You know, the receivers that have multiple, you know, what, 10, 15 guys sometimes in those position rooms. I mean, you know, that's a pretty weighty number.
Alan Perlstein asks, yeah, the current candidates for starting QB are all recruits of Coach D'Antonio, all recruited to play in Coach D's offense. From what you know about new OC Jay Johnson, what quarterback on the Spartan roster seems to be the best fit in terms of their physical size and athletic ability? Chris, have you had a chance to study Jay Johnson?
Yeah, it seems like 4 years ago, but it certainly was somewhere in the spring. I couldn't tell you exactly when, since, you know, I saw someone say the other day, like, is today this day or that day? Is kind of what I heard. But, you know, I think it's going to be interesting, because I think one of the things that Jay Johnson talked about is being adaptable as an offensive coordinator to the personnel. You know, he likes to throw the ball downfield. So, I mean, you know, he also likes bigger quarterbacks. So I think someone like a Theo Day might fit that. Peyton Thorne isn't exactly the biggest of quarterbacks, but he's got that mobility aspect to him. Rocky Lombardi is kind of a Mack truck. So you can do some different things with him. And I think that, you know, he's got experience, which I think is big. You know, but I think the question is, you know, especially in a truncated season, I think some of it's going to be approach, right? I mean, how are they going to approach this? I mean, are they going to use it with a chance to just say, we need to see these kids and do it that way, you know, and then kind of look towards the following year? I don't know. I mean, you know, and that's, I think, the other thing to keep in mind as well with, we were talking about the waiver situation, you know, these kids are going to get that extra year. You know, is Rocky Lombardi all of a sudden got 3 years of eligibility left? You know, it's a little different when you have a quarterback with multiple years of eligibility versus a quarterback with 1 year of eligibility left. I think, you know, obviously Damian Terry is a great example of that. You know, a kid who, you know, never really got a chance because Connor Cook was the class ahead of him and Brian Lewerke was the class behind him. And, you know, he was just kind of stuck in limbo, even as a four-star recruit. So, you know, it's really hard to say when, and it's, again, especially the quarterback position, not having those practices in the spring and summer to build the reps with the guys, to do the things that you need to do to carry the whole offense, because you're so fragmented right now with how they're practicing. I think it's going to be one of those things that could play out over the course of the season. And, you know, you might see all three of those guys. I doubt that you'll see Noah Kim, who is the last of the quarterbacks that is a true freshman. But, you know, kind of a freebie year, I think.
Yeah, what you're saying is kind of feeds in the next question here, Chris. Joel Alexander asked, do you think MSU coaches would consider taking a rotational approach to the QB situation in the first few games to truly see who is the best QB?
I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. We haven't, you know, they're just coming back now for good reason. We haven't been able to ask them that. But I also, I don't think it makes sense to do. It usually doesn't help a quarterback. I don't think it helps Rocky Lombardi, who I think has feels like a leader on that team, has a sense of that. I think my guess is he will have the job to start. And if things don't go well for a couple games, it may not be his job. But it's harder to bench the veteran guy and then come back to him later when, you know. And I just don't think that works very often. So I would be very surprised if they did that.
And our last question, Tim W. asks, most important coach for MSU to have immediate success, Chris Kapilovich or Jay Johnson? Chris?
Boy, I mean, that's an interesting question because, I mean, obviously Jay Johnson's success is tied to Chris Kapilovich. But at the same point, everything is won in the trenches. I think just simply from a year one building block kind of year, I think to me it's got to be Chris Kapilovich, because you need to win in the trenches. And when Mel Tucker talks about being relentless, that's where you need to be relentless to have a productive offense. You have to have those five guys and then five guys behind them all ready to maul. So that's been an issue for Michigan State, both over the last 4 or 5 years, with production standpoint and also from an injury standpoint. So yeah, I'm going to go with Chris Kapilovich.
I'm totally with Chris here. I mean, if the offensive line is productive and a force, or at least holds its own, the offense has a chance, and the offensive coordinator has a chance. If he doesn't, it won't. And I'm not saying that Michigan State's had the best coordinators in Dave Warner and Brad Salem, but when they've had offensive lines, they've had good offenses. And yeah, you want to see, I think, more creativity. You want to see something a little different than what we've seen in late in the D'Antoni era, especially. But if they can't run the football and they can't protect it, you can have any wizard out there you want. It just doesn't work.
I'm with both of you. I think it's Kapilovich, however we're saying that as well. All right. We are now on to the sports reporters part of our podcast. Any final thoughts before we sign off for the night?
I'm taking a few days off, guys. That's my thought. This is the last thing I'm doing for a few days, and to recalibrate and get ready for a long, chaotic couple months ahead for all of us.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, there's a basketball season.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the basketball stuff, yeah.
Yeah, November 25th is when it's going to come out. I mean, so I think we're going to get an interesting overlap, but not the overlap we maybe thought, because football season will be done about the time it was usually done anyway. And how this all looks and whether this all happens is still a little bit out there. But look, as somebody who enjoys this stuff and loves it, I think it could be fun to cover. I don't have any idea whether we'll be anywhere in person covering it yet. I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah.
But I think we're a long way from normalcy as a society. You listen to the CDC director today, we're looking at best case scenario, end of the spring, early summer, probably next year, from feeling some of that. And so this gives us some, and to be able to enjoy college football and college basketball, if we can do it safely, I look forward to it. And I think for Michigan State fans in hoops, you've got a team that has a chance to compete at a very, very high level for big things. But in football, this isn't like some team that you think is going to be dreadful and you're not building towards anything. I think it's a potentially exciting team to watch, even if it's a very average team.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. If you enjoy this podcast and the work surrounding it, please consider subscribing. You can follow our coverage at lsj.com, freep.com, and on Twitter at Graham_Couch, at Chris Solari, at Phil_Friend, and at LSJ Green White. Thanks for listening.